Dear Dhamma friends, you can come back to the lesson today. So we are having a short Dhamma sermon on Kayagata Sati Sutta, which is more relevant to our practice. So I request all of you to pay attention on this Kayagata Sati Sutta, where Buddha describes the benefits of mindfulness of the body, being aware of the body. Because immediately it is difficult for us to purify the mind, to completely uproot various defilements. So we have to take various strategies to develop the mind, to establish mindfulness first of all. So in order to establish mindfulness, Buddha comes up with various strategies, methods. And one of the methods is to be mindful about various bodily actions, postures, and the body itself, and look at the body, the various processes, and being with the body. So this being with the body is one of the very interesting process, typically where our mind is not that interested. Our mind typically interested of going out and searching happiness in the on the outside, and again maybe even looking at someone else's body, but not our own body. Probably we may get some amount of attention to our body when it is sick, when it is going through some severe pain. But otherwise, we simply distracted by various external affairs and we never take part in observing the body. But here in this simple practice, Buddha is again and again appreciating to be with the body. So that is why this is Kayagata Sati, mindfulness of the body, is one of the very interesting process in this mindfulness practice, and it has many benefits. So Buddha comes up with several strategies here, several methods here. First of all, there is the very common Anapanasati practice, where one is trying to keep one's attention on in-breath and out-breath, how this breathing process happens. So one is keeping oneself straight, uplift, and then keep one's attention at the closer to the nostril, and being aware of in-breath, and again being aware of out-breath. So likewise, gradually, one's paying attention to this ongoing breathing process, and we are as much as possible trying our best to allow natural breathing without forceful breathing, without interfering in the process, and allow things to happen naturally. So this is a, in a way, kind of an art, where we are not interfering in the process, rather we allow process to happen naturally as much as possible, and we are like an outsider watching the whole process. So this kind of a process actually brings a lot of attention to the body, and this attention slowly then pervades the body. The whole body is now drenched with our attention. Our whole attention is drawn to the body, and therefore it is now not going out. Previously it is very difficult because mind is not at all interested of watching the breath. But now the opposite happens, where mind is interested of being with the body because it understood that going out is a waste of time, and it get irritated and get burned by various defilements. But just being with the body is a beautiful experience. It's a kind of a neutral experience and a kind of a pleasing experience. Therefore, the outcome of this each and every method is to be with the body. Now mind likes to be with the body, likes to get concentrated with the body, and like now it has found its own home. Previously it is going out in search of happiness, but ultimately where it found the happiness is back at home. Nowadays, due to this COVID epidemic, you are not allowed to go out, and where it is most safest is at home. Similarly, the mind also understood going out is a waste of time, and going out is dangerous, subjected to various defilements, and therefore ultimately it is choosing the body as its oasis, as a safe island. So in mindfulness of breathing, so this is the result where mind now stays at body, with the body, within the body, and concentrated inside the body. Similarly, if one uses postures, the same situation where various bodily postures can be used. While standing, one can be mindful. While lying down, one can be mindful. While walking, one can be mindful. While sitting, one can be mindful. And therefore, these postures are also very useful to keep our attention. So ultimately, mind recognizes the beauty of that. And as a result, mind naturally starts to stay within the body. Then we get on to clear comprehension, where various other daily activities are introduced to the process. And not only the postures, not only the breathing, but as humans, we are engaged in so many activities like eating, drinking, wearing clothes, getting up, sleeping, maybe stretching our limbs, maybe keeping still, quiet, or talking with another person. So likewise, so many day-to-day activities are there. So now we are expanding mindfulness to these various day-to-day activities, daily activities. As a result, now mindfulness becomes one of our intimate friend. We are very much now have a kind of an intimacy with our own body, and therefore mind founds it very beautiful, very attractive to be with this body, because going out is dangerous. Going out is subjected to various matters, problems, burnings. But if the mind is able to stay at home, it is more safe. So therefore, now a yogi is expanding his experience to various day-to-day activities and trying to be mindful while washing the dishes, trying to be mindful. While brushing your teeth, trying to be mindful. While having your dinner, trying to be mindful. While talking to another person, trying to be mindful. Likewise, we are expanding mindfulness to daily activities so that mindfulness now becomes your friend, your safe place, your like a bodyguard, like a safe safety. And then Buddha took us to various bodily parts, completely changing our perspective. Now we are sort of looking at the body in a different perspective, in a different angle. So far, probably we might have thought, okay, this body belongs to me, it is beautiful, it is ugly, it is good, it is tall, it is short, it is fat. So many different definitions are there. So many different perceptions are there, attitudes are there. But now Buddha is asking us to look at it as a group of parts, or a combination, an accumulation of different bodily parts. Now our perspective completely changed, because now it is loses its unity. So far we were thinking this body is a single thing, one thing. But now we understand it is not a single thing or one thing, but it's a combination of so many bodily parts, like a vehicle made up with assembling so many components. This body also is assembled with so many bodily parts. If you consider your own vehicle, your own car, it has tires, it has seats, it has an engine, it has the, say, fuel tank, steering wheel, gearbox. So many components are there. Once they are arranged in a particular manner, then we call it a car. We call it a jeep, we call it a bus. So likewise, depending on the assembly, we can call it, we can give it a name. But unfortunately, we get lost in that name. We forgot that it is made up with so many components, so many parts. Similarly, even though this body contains so many parts, we forget that and we simply get obsessed with this outer appearance. So therefore, these bodily parts is one of the interesting eye-opener for us to look at the body in a different way, so that we understand this body is not something very beautiful or something attractive, but rather it's a accumulation of so many bodily components. And then Buddha took us to various elements, Dhatu Manasikara. Now even subtle way, Buddha is asking us to look at it. Previously as various bodily parts, now even to a very refined level, Buddha asks us to see. Now in this section, we understand that this body consists of primarily four elements, earth element, fire element, water element and air element, and they manifest in different ways. Earth element has its own characteristics. Water element has its own characteristics. Fire element has its own characteristics. And air element has its own characteristics. Whenever we are able to recognize any of these characteristics, accordingly we can understand the presence of respective element. So more and more we look at it, more and more we understand this whole body is nothing but a manifestation of elements. And so this practice also helps us to penetrate the delusion where we consider this whole body as one thing, as something, kind of a compact, kind of a component, one unit. But when we are able to recognize these various element characteristics, it becomes something like a whole process. It's a combination of so many elements and it's constantly change. So our understanding further develops and further refines, and therefore this Dhatu Manasikara is one of the key areas in Vipassana where the wisdom is aroused. And then we get on to 9 charnel ground contemplations where Buddha asks us to see what will happen to this body after death. After we die, what is going to happen to this body? So this is another way of looking at the body. So in a way, we can understand Buddha is using this our body in many different ways to arouse wisdom, to arouse mindfulness, and to arouse concentration. And then we get on to absorptions, where how one can develop first jhana while keeping the body as its foundation. Now, using anapanasati, one can attain first jhana, and various other methods are also available to attain first jhana. But here, important thing is the unique characteristic or unique feature of first jhana is its jhanic factors, jhana factors. So, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Vitakka is the applied mind, vichara is the sustained mind, piti is the rapture, sukha is the happiness, and ekagata is the one-pointedness. So these are the jhana factors available in first jhana, and accordingly we can differentiate it with other jhanas. And how one can attain a jhana is a kind of a practice that we have to deal with. Suppose if you are dealing with anapanasati, where you are keeping your attention at the nostril and being aware of in-breath and out-breath, again and again you are applying your mind there. So at one time there is a possibility of arising of a nimitta, arising of a concentration sign, anapanasati nimitta, which indicates that now the mind is fairly concentrated. And once it is concentrated, this nimitta appear and it becomes brighter and available for us. It is not unstable, rather it becomes more and more stable. And this stable, bright nimitta can be used to attain jhana, to absorb to jhana. So this is one technique we are using, where anapanasati nimitta being used as a way of attaining first jhana. So then we get on to the second jhana. So the difference is the level of concentration is very high. In the first jhana, because of the presence of applied thought, vitakka, again and again, mind has to be driven to the object. Mind has to be applied to the object, applied to the samadhi nimitta, concentration sign. It likes mind drifts and again comes back. Mind drifts and again come back. So this happens very quickly, in very, very rapidly, and but still kind of a slight movement is there. So the yogi recognizes this slight movement, and once it is there, again the it is like rubbing the object, rubbing the samadhi nimitta, samadhi, the concentration sign. The mind actually moves inside that sign. It associates that sign. Kind of a slight movement is still there. So more and more one stays and enjoys this first jhana, so they will recognize these are certain defects in the first jhana. Because again and again mind has to be applied there, otherwise it drifts, and again and again application is there, and once it is applied, mind has to be with that object, to rub that object, to touch that object, to move within the object. So this is also a kind of a defect, kind of a drawback. So later he understands if there's a possibility of having a more stable concentration, having a more stable samadhi, that would be much better. So how to have such a stable samadhi is to eliminate this vitakka and vichara. So once the mind is applied to a certain object, so it is there for a long time. You don't need to again and again apply the mind. It is constant there. It is fairly permanent there. Permanently stay there for a considerable period of time. It does not drift. It does not lose its position, place. Rather, it stays there for a long time. And once it is applied and keeping there stable, you don't need to rub that object, or you don't need to move within this object, but rather it further get absorbed to this object, kind of become fixed with the object. There is no movement at all. Now it has completely fixed, completely bound to that object, so there is no even a slight movement possible. So therefore, this first jhana, when compared with the first jhana, the second jhana has more concentration. So the concentration is prominent there, because the less distractions and less movements, and the mind get fully contacted, fully coupled with the object, and therefore a fair amount of concentration, higher amount of concentration is possible. And since there are no defilements, no hindrances, mind is happy. Now we can get into the third jhana, where the yogi, more he associates the second jhana, he now understands this rupture is somewhat gross, because time to time he feels kind of waves coming and going in the body, kind of pressure arising in the body, and kind of electrocution like experience happens in the body. Goosebumps happens in the body, so it's a kind of a rough experience, gross experience. How about having a more tranquil experience without having this kind of a gross rupture? How about having a calm, tranquil, smooth kind of an experience? That is a very comfortable feeling, at ease, and more convenient happiness. This is a more mature happiness than the previous one. Previous one is fairly a gross happiness. But now, the yogi is driven to a more subtle happiness, more contented happiness. So this is the nature of the third jhana. We are, after understanding the drawbacks of the second jhana, especially the defects in the rupture, piti, now he is trying to refine piti. He is trying to refine rupture into a more comfortable feeling, more comfortable happiness, more mature happiness. So therefore he drops piti. He drops this rupture, and now this third jhana has only two jhana factors. That is the happiness and the unity of mind, ekagata. Now this happiness is derived of rupture. Rupture is gone. Rupture has sort of faded away. But still some happiness is there. Kind of a comfort. Kind of a smoothness. Kind of a contentment, especially is available. Now, when one is experiencing third jhana, so he especially experiences this contentment. So therefore, sometimes third jhana is recognized as one of the very beautiful contented experience one can have in this life. Now, you know, there are many yogis who are trying to be with various absorptions. Among these absorptions, one of the very beautiful experiences is this third jhana, where the contentment is ultimately possible, and therefore it is really praised by the nobles. Praised by the nobles, telling, now ultimately mind has found its oasis. There is no burning of lust, hatred, delusion, doubt, etc. And again, there is no unhappiness. There is no any kind of movement. There is no any struggle. It's fairly calm down, fairly tranquil, fairly content. And therefore, it is one of the very beautiful experiences one can have in this life. It's a, anyway, even though it is temporary, still it's a beautiful experience if one can have it. Therefore, the third jhana is highly appreciated, praised by the nobles. And when one is in this third jhana, Buddha says, so this happiness, typically called as nippitikena sukhena, where there is a kind of a contentment, there's a kind of a comfort, that's a kind of a happiness. It is not a gross happiness. It is not mixed with various ups and downs. It's a very mature happiness, calmness, comfort, feeling at ease. And now this happiness is fully felt in the whole body. So that's what it is mentioned here. This happiness is now drenched, steep, fill and pervade this whole body. Now he feels it, the whole body. That's why we are, the body is engaged here. Body is coming to the picture. So this very mature happiness is available and felt throughout the body. None of the body part is missed from this happiness. It is very much like you are inside a water pool. If you are inside the water pool, suppose you are soaked, submerged, and the whole body is subjected to the coolness of water. So Buddha is giving a very beautiful simile here. He is giving some similar simile, where he is asking if there is a lotus pond. It may be red lotus, it may be white lotuses, whatever it is. And there are certain lotus flowers. They haven't come up yet. They haven't came out of the water, but they are underneath. They are under the water. So since they are under the water, the whole lotus is fully immersed in water. None of the parts being drenched by water. The whole body, the wholeness is being wet, is being touched, encompassed by water. So this is the simile Buddha is giving here. Similarly, if one is in third jhana, this happiness, this comfort, this lightness, or this contentment is something that one feels throughout the body, by its whole body. So if one is able to practice this kind of absorption, the outcome is, or the result is, that now mind likes to stay within the body. Mind understood that contentment is possible within the body while at home. You don't need to go after various external happiness, external pleasures, because you have found a really unworldly happiness while being at home, while being at your own body. So therefore, Buddha again mentioned one of the result of this practice is that one will drop the typical mundane household life related thoughts, but now the mind likes to be within the body. It get concentrated inside the body. It really likes to be within the body. So this is the outcome of that is all is a kind of a common outcome, and it is common to this third jhana as well. So this is the kind of a note or the information that I like to share today as the short Dhamma sermon. And now I open up the session for questions.
Outside Bhante, there's currently three questions. Question number one. Mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, since I don't get hardly any time to practice sitting and walking, I try to be mindful on day-to-day activities. I try to be mindful of my posture when sitting or lying down for some time while eating, brushing teeth, and having a shower. The biggest hurdle I had initially was forgetting to be mindful. During the initial period, sometimes after one day, I recalled that I was not mindful. However, slowly the issue got sorted to some extent, and from time to time during these activities, I get flashes of being not mindful and get the capability to put some effort to be mindful while on the task. The second issue I face is, very quickly the mind gets distracted. It will not take more than 1 or 2 minutes to start thinking, and after a few minutes, I recall not being mindful and come back to the task. The cyclic drifting and coming back happens throughout the time. The third concern I have is how to gauge the quality of mindfulness. When sitting and walking practice, there is a thorough technique which we can follow and improve. How we improve the quality of mindfulness using a technique while on task, such as brushing teeth with metta, that's the end.
Yeah, actually we can say like, suppose you are, if we consider one activity like brushing teeth. So there are, suppose when you start this, so you, the mind is not that interesting of being with this brushing teeth because it's not a joyful experience maybe. So only temporary, only for several minutes at least, at most, maybe while you brushing teeth. So that may be your first experience. Only you say 1 minute, 2 minute, mind stays within that activity. Rest of the time, the mind is outside. Mind goes to the past, goes to the future. Suppose you are continuing like this. And after about, say, another 5 days, 6 days, you understand. Now mind stays longer in this brushing teeth. Now suppose it is staying there for 3 minutes. And for 3 minutes now, mind like to be with the brushing. So that basically means the mindfulness has established on this brushing teeth. That is the activity that we have selected. Now, if you want to improve it further, now you have to introduce clear comprehension here. Now, brushing teeth can be done mindfully, but unless you introduce clear comprehension, sampajanya, you won't get the clear picture. You are not going to the detail. So how you get into the clear comprehension, how you get into the clear picture is where you are now trying to look at various components of this whole process. Rather than taking brushing teeth as one simple activity, you recognize it has a combination of so many activities. Say you are holding a brush, you are searching the toothpaste, and you are opening the lid, you are squeezing it, and you are taking a little amount of toothpaste to the brush. Now again you are closing the toothpaste and you are keeping it properly, and now you are taking the brush closer to the mouth, and probably you can feel the say the fragrance of the toothpaste, and now you are touching the teeth, and probably you can feel whether it is cold or its nature can be felt. It may be very smooth, kind of a jelly-like sensation, and now you start to brush the teeth. There you understand, okay, the now the brush being touched into various components inside the mouth, maybe the teeth, maybe the gums, maybe the tongue. So likewise, every time you brush the teeth, now all these different components of the mouth being touched, and maybe the taste of the toothpaste, you also can be felt, and it mixed up with saliva, and bubbles are coming. So likewise, so many very refined details are available in this process, and more you are mindful, more and more your clear comprehension improve, so more of these details are available to you. So as a result, you can understand now the quality of mindfulness has improved. Now mind cannot go out because mind has a task. Mind has something to do. Mind has something to reveal. So more and more mind is available with you and readily fixed on this process and well coupled in this bodily process, then only these many information is available for you. So that is where the quality of mindfulness is improved. And similarly, suppose you are doing various other activities, you are, it's the same approach, same methodology. First you establish mindfulness simply on the simple activity. Say you are wearing clothes, that's all. You didn't get much detail at the beginning, but later you can apply the same mechanism to recognize some subtle activities involved in this simple activity. There are various other sub-activities involved in this wearing of clothes. Say you are searching a proper cloth and you are taking it to your hand. So likewise, so many other sub-components or sub-activities are available. So recognition of these sub-components indicate that your mindfulness is improving. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 2 of 7. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, my sitting practice is mindful breathing. As per your guidance, I observe the in-breath and out-breath after settling on my posture and scanning the body for a few minutes. I can observe various sensations such as how the breath touches and brushes the nostrils, hot and cold nature, volume and length of the breath. After observing the differences of in-breath and out-breath, they tend to settle and become subtle. After about 10 minutes, the differences fade away and breath appears like a flux moving in and out. I feel lightness in the body and comfort in the sitting posture. During this time, I usually start getting the sensations of the posture, the sitting nature like a pyramid, weight of the body, small movements inside, etc. Most of the time I observe hard and soft nature of the touching parts and spots of hot or cold nature, no specific location but within the body. I keep focusing on these observations throughout the session. Over a time period, I realize this fading nature of the breath and appearance of body posture observations take less and less time to appear. Initially, the breath seems nearly vanished and very subtle when the posture appeared. However, lately, even with the light cross breath, where in-breath and out-breath can be distinguished, the posture observations appear. Should I wait long enough for the breath to become subtle and disappear to focus on any other observation? My mind says that the quality of the meditation is high when the breath vanishes and when I am in a deep, relaxed state. But the way it is rolling out seems the opposite way. Hope Bhante can clarify this situation with metta. That's the end.
Actually, as you have observed, if we are able to refine our mindfulness and say have more focused attention, then your posture also can be looked at in a different angle rather than sort of having considering it as one thing, you can experience so many activities available within the posture. Suppose it is sitting, maybe the heartbeat rising and falling, in breath and out breath, and various other bodily processes. This whole various activities are within happening inside the body. It appears like a factory. Now, while being in the posture, this kind of an experience happens only when your concentration is well developed and you have a fair unity of mind. And if you come to this prematured, then that level of understanding, that level of recognition may not happen, because still the mind is not refined to penetrate to these all various processes. So that is why if you spend fair amount of time in Anapanasati, till it refines, till it focuses well, then there are benefits. After you come to the posture, the posture appears very vivid, and all the information within the body are also accessible to you, available to you. But anyway, it is not a hard and fast rule. More and more you experienced, you will understand this the time taken to refine mindfulness. Suppose in Anapanasati, it took, say, in your early stages, suppose it took 30 minutes to refine it, to come to the refined breath. But as you practice, this time period reduces. So it may be now happening within 20 minutes. It may be now happening within 15 minutes. So likewise, quickly your mind refines. And later you can spend more time within the posture. And if you come to the posture without much of mindfulness, while engaged in the posture, that itself helps to refine the mindfulness. So therefore, it is not, we don't need to take it as a hard and fast rule, because all these bodily processes are in a way instruments for us to sharpen our mindfulness. So Anapanasati is one such activity. Rising and falling is another activity. So likewise, many different processes are available. So any of these activities you can use to refine your mindfulness. Yeah, back to you, Chatu.
Question number 307. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, regarding the various mindfulness objects and techniques explained in Kayagata Sati Sutta, my experience is that that in practice they appear together or one after the other. For example, when you start with breathing mindfulness, it can expand to postures, then transform to different changes, as in sampajanya or clear comprehension, then to element characteristics, etc. Is there a reason or explanation of having multiple meditation objects at the same time or one after the other? That's the end of the question.
Well, it is like a toolbox. Now, when you have a toolbox, you have many different tools where you can use for several activities. I mean, one tool is good for one activity. Another tool is used to another activity. So likewise, many different tools are necessary. So similarly here in meditation also, many tools are available, many techniques are available, and they have many different benefits. So one brings one kind of experience, one brings one kind of benefits, another brings another types of benefits. Say Anapanasati, say for example, helps to really refine our attention. On the other hand, say the postures, it helps us to have a kind of wholeness of the experience. And say looking at the whole thing as bodily parts, it helps us to penetrate the body, to cut off a fair amount of delusion, and to recognize various element characteristics that also eliminate delusion and also refines mindfulness. And on the other hand, if you get into the jhana, so where the concentration is fairly empowered or strengthened. So likewise, different techniques are available for us to address or to enhance various qualities which is necessary in our practice. this whole practice is in a way development of certain qualities, certain skills in the mind. So to develop certain skill, you need different techniques. As I mentioned, say if you want to develop mindfulness, so say Anapanasati. Actually, all the methods are good for developing mindfulness. But on the other hand, suppose to develop concentration, Anapanasati is one of the very good techniques to develop concentration. On the other hand, if you want to develop wisdom, then the Dhatu Manasikara, 32 parts of the body, so that those are more profound and they are more powerful in developing wisdom. So likewise, different attributes are there where we need to address. That is where Buddha explains in faculties. Five faculties are there. They are sometimes called as five spiritual faculties. Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. Saddha is the faith. Viriya is the effort. Sati is the mindfulness. Samadhi is the concentration. And Panya is the wisdom. So we have to have a kind of a balanced approach to all these various faculties. You can't simply look at only one quality, but all the qualities has to be looked after. Time to time they have to be strengthened. Actually, many of these techniques contributes to many of these faculties, not just one faculty. Say for example, when you are developing element characteristics, it helps to develop concentration, it helps to develop mindfulness, and as well it helps to develop wisdom. But on the other hand, if you simply do absorptions, it may develop fair amount of concentration, but less mindfulness and less wisdom, because it is so much strong concentration is involved there. So likewise, different techniques are available to address various faculties. Yeah.
Question number 407. This is a general question. Based on Bhante's explanation on the jhana, I am now scared that I would never let it go if I somehow managed to get to that state. Is there a risk that we should be aware of considering our tendency to attach to anything pleasing? That's the end.
It is not something not impossible, it is also possible. But now if you are in your young age, you can try these things because you have some time, we can say. You can enjoy, hopefully, without getting contracted with COVID. But on the other hand, because vipassana practice takes a little amount of time. And sometimes it is producing certain amount of heat or certain amount of dryness in our practice, because it deals with the reality of the nature or reality of the phenomena, and it is not interesting sometimes. Say for example, when you are looking at the body, understand it is constantly whole bodily parts or whole elements are constantly arising and passing away. And sometimes it is giving very dry, alarming experience. So it does not provide happiness immediately. So on such occasions, sometimes you have to enjoy your mind. You have to enjoy your experience. You have to enjoy practice. So at that time you can take a little samatha practice, like jhana, having a bath and again comforting yourself, again having a nap, again having a break, recharging your battery, something like that. So it's very much like, on the other hand, we can say, like if we consider vipassana as a battle, we can consider this jhana as you are coming back and strengthening yourself and take a break while being in the bunker, while being in the camp. But the real battle happens in the vipassana while being face to face with the enemy. So therefore both are necessary in a way where you need fair amount of time to relax yourself, to enjoy the kind of a seclusion to enjoy this happiness, bliss. And on the other hand, just being at the just being in the camp, you can never win the war. So similarly, if you simply spend your time in the camp, in the jhana, you can never win the vipassana. So both are necessary in a way. So you can take it in that angle. Yeah.
Bhante, I actually want to ask my own question. So you said that young people can try. Do you think I'm young enough to try it?
Sure, of course. You can try.
So generally, I've not done anything like this because I just...
But on the other hand, one issue here is, Chatu, now, if one starts with vipassana and if one already experienced fair amount of vipassana concentrations, so they are more profound than samatha concentrations. Now, actually, in this sutta, vipassana concentrations are not explained. But if one spends fair amount of time in vipassana and able to experience deeper concentrations available in vipassana, then it is much stronger and much relaxing than the samatha concentrations. So you will understand the difference. The samatha concentrations are very narrow and very short-lived. The vipassana concentrations are much broader and sort of established on wisdom. So it is therefore much stronger. So then such a vipassana yogi may not much appreciate the samatha concentrations because they appear like a children's play onto a vipassana yogi.
I have a follow-up question for that, Bhante.
Yeah.
So if I did want to try it, and I wouldn't devote a lot of time to it anyway, if I was to use body as an object or breath, but say I can't, because I've done vipassana for a long time, say I can't use breath, or I can't observe it, what do you do?
I didn't get the question, Chatu, properly.
So say you want to do samatha on breath,
right,
or that's your object,
mm-hmm,
but because you've done vipassana for a long time, you can't, when you start, you can't see the breath, so you can't use it as an object as such.
Right.
What could you do?
That's what I said, because now the mind is fairly trained to non-grasping, because vipassana, one of the objective is to have a unattached mind, not to grasp anything. Now, if you are to absorb to this jhana, to practice jhana, you have to have this sort of absorption. You need to, again, coupled with something. So that is where the mind really does not appreciate that. Because mind now understands the value of an unassociated mind. Mind understands the value of unattached mind. So why are you going and again attach with something? Why are you going and bother with the breath now? Since mind has the capacity to be free from breath, free from the whole body, free from all the feelings, free from any mental constructs. So this is a very sort of opening experience. It's a kind of a freedom available for the mind. So for the one who has experienced that kind of a freedom, cannot really appreciate the happiness where you are getting by attaching to something. The kind of a contradiction is there. So we cannot encourage the vipassana yogis who have gone really far to come back and practice jhana. It is not essential. Rather, better to develop the mind further to reduce various defilements, addressing various defilements, and the happiness available in such mind is more profound, and it is more deeper, and it's more peaceful, because the samatha concentrations are very much like you are locked at a cell. Vipassana concentrations are like you are free from the cell. You have the freedom, but still not attached, still not hooked up with anything. So that freedom is much opening, sort of relaxing than the samatha concentrations.
Thank you, Bhante. Question number five of seven, mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, one day after a sitting session, I got up. That time I saw myself, my hands, the legs, and the body, but I couldn't connect it as my hands or my body. It was like I was seeking a movie. I don't know how to express it. I got freaked out. I came back to my room, didn't talk or tell anyone. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't have completely believed it. I wanted to completely believe it, but my fear took me back and I felt my body is my body again. Please advise, Venerable Sir, what must I do and how should I face it? Thank you and much merit.
Yeah. Could you repeat the first few statements, Chatu?
Yeah. It's not written so well, but I'll do my best. Dear Venerable Sir, one day after a sitting session, I got up. That time I saw myself, my hands, the legs, and the body, but I couldn't connect it as my hands or my body.
Okay, now I got it. Yes, fine. So actually, this is something that we have to appreciate rather than to reject. You don't need to really be afraid of that, because one of the outcome of the practice is to lose all these concepts, lose all these conventions. Now, if your practice still has legs, tummy, head, nose, tongue, all these, so it is still not yet mature. I mean, we may start with them. Say, for example, you are doing rising and falling. So you feel my tummy is rising, tummy is falling. So for you, still the tummy is available. But later, as you grow, as your concentration improves, as your mindfulness improves, so there is no tummy. Only the rising and falling is available. And later, further you continue. Now, there is no single rising, there is no single falling. It's a series of risings. Series of fallings are available. And later, and each and every, this minute rising and falling, now cannot recognize where it is happening. You can't find out the tummy now. You can't find out your legs. You can't find out your hands. You can't find out your head. But what is available is simply a kind of a movement, some type of a sensation, just an indication that you are living. So you don't need to be afraid of this. So we have given so many names, so many labels to these various bodily components, just for convenient communication. But in the reality, what is available is all this very basic level or the fundamental primordial characteristics. And once we come back to those primordial characteristics, there is no I, there is no person, there is no man, there is no woman, there is no Australia, there is no Japan, there is no Sri Lanka, there is no tummy, there is no hand, there is no leg. Merely characteristics, element characteristics. So that is where we lose the notion of I, the notion of self, notion of individual. So that is the growth in our practice. So therefore, please welcome it rather than being afraid of it. You need to practice again and again, and this experience will be a common thing then. The experience is a repeatable thing. And more you experience it, more and more wisdom will be available for you. Those are we call as insights. So you are looking at the whole thing in a different angle. This is a kind of an eye-opener to our whole living. So this is how our practice is growing, maturing. Back to you.
Number 6 of 8. This is a general question. Bhante, when practicing mindfulness of the body, can one develop aversion towards the body? That's the end.
Yeah, that is where we need to find the correct dose. Suppose if you practice 32 parts of the body with the angle of ugliness, the angle of loathsomeness. So if you practice this daily for many hours continuously, there's a possibility that you start to hate the body. That is where you have exceed the limit. It is not the idea. It is not the idea that suppose you had lust towards the body, you have conceit towards the body. It is not the idea of change it to the opposite. Like you now hate the body, you want to kill yourself. That is the opposite. So then we are losing the track. It is not. What we want to do is to take it to the middle. Just to eliminate lust, to reduce conceit and come to the reality, to the middle. That is where the correct dose is possible. So therefore, certain practices are there where you need that correct dose, and you need to recognize your mind whether it is now neutral, it is free from lust, free from conceit. If it is so, you need to stop that because the purpose is done. So therefore, it is true that what you are telling, certain bodily practices, these kayagatasati techniques, can lead to hate, can lead to anger if you don't know the limit. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. Can Bhante kindly publish the jhana notes on the website, please? Much merits to Bhante.
Sure. Actually, the whole thing is already published in the Mindfulness for Young Adults section in the Nisaravani website. And I will publish I will update it, including today's note as well. So maybe Chamila can publish the name or the link where it is located. And quickly I will upload today's session as well.
Thank you, Bhante. Question number 8. This is the last one. General question. Dear Bhante, you have mentioned about vipassana concentration or samadhi. Does it refer to momentary concentration or something else? Thank you, that's the end.
Yeah, momentary concentration is one type of concentration available, but later there are many other concentration or vipassana concentrations are possible. Say for example, when you are able to see the arising and passing away constantly for a long time, that itself produces fair amount of concentration. That is another type of concentration possible. And suppose now mind freeze from everything. Now there is nothing to hold. And there this nothingness or this emptiness, if one develops, that also become type of a concentration. Sometimes we call signless concentration. Animitta samadhi. So these are more profound and more advanced vipassana concentrations, and So therefore, vipassana also has many levels of concentration, and especially wisdom attribute is prominent there. At the Kanika Samadhi, it's very less wisdom. But later, assume that your mind gets concentrated while you are observing various arising and passing away. So that concentration has fair amount of wisdom. On the other hand, if one's mind releases everything and get into the emptiness or get into the signlessness, so that is where more wisdom is available. So likewise, depending on the level of your wisdom, especially in the vipassana, concentration become more and more different. It is not always the depth of the concentration that we need to consider here, but the depth of the wisdom. Yeah.
That was the last question. I have two small announcements before we end. Just to repeat, we have some end of year retreats happening in Australia. If you want any details of that, please send us an email or send us a message. The second announcement is about our next session, which is November the 8th. So Bhante has limited availability. So we're going to start at 1:30 p.m. Sri Lankan time. Or that's 7 p.m. daylight saving time in Australia. So the walking part will be replaced by the discussion, and then straight after that we'll have question and answer, and then after Bhante leaves we'll have the sitting session. Is there any other comments on that?
Yeah, maybe actually I'd like to inform about you that there's a invitation from all Ceylon Buddhist Congress to Bhante Dhammajiva to deliver a keynote address on 8th on their one of their AGM or one of their sort of annual session. And I also was invited to be a panelist in this session, so that's why we have to advance the session. And I'll share with the links once we received, so if you are interested you also can join or sort of listen to the session. And anyway, I'll participate to the Mindfulness for Young Adults at 1:30, as Chatu mentioned, and try to spend 1 hour to cover the questions and then the actually to give the short Dhamma sermon.
Thank you, Bhante. So with that, we'd like to wrap up for today. So I had a good range of questions, and also just personally thank Bhante because I never really ask questions, so I finally got a chance.
Yeah.
And with that, we want to pass notes to Bhante, and we're giving up that in time and realize that you have a very busy schedule as you're here for next week as well. And also I'd like to thank the people behind the scenes doing organizing, and also all the people seen and unseen who are helping out with this program. And lastly, to all the participants, because without you, this program wouldn't happen. So with that, I'd like to end the session. Therwan Sanlai.
Therwan Sanlai. Sukhi Hotu.